Thank you very much, Carolina, for the kind invitation. It was indeed a challenge, but a great pleasure for me to come back and to see how the project starting many years ago in Trier, which I'm very fond, and we have a lot of beautiful memories of that launching of the program, of the first version of the program. So I was really very excited to hear from the presentation of the court coordinator how the progress in each country developed during this year. Secondly, indeed, it was a very difficult task to choose how to construe my presentation. Actually, it's a cluster, it's a package in two parts. First, just as the French colleagues will say, a mousse-bouche, so just an aperitif for you to start up the discussions. And on the second part with the workshop, I prepare some practical situation. We invite all of us to just read and come back and have a group discussion. Actually, we are here in a setting of a dialogue and learning opportunities one for another. So I'm not here pretending I'm going to tell you novelties, no way, because we are colleagues and we are learning from each other. But I have to confess, even if I'm very fond to the topic and I'm doing presentation on preliminary ruling in different settings, in Nîmes, in EGTN, in Luxembourg court, each time I find something new and excited about this topic. Actually, it's a never-ending story, and as a Spanish colleague remind us, the jewels of the crown of the entire system is the preliminary ruling. But what I'm proposing for you is just to go hand by hand based on a very provocative approach on the preliminary ruling made by General Advocate Bobek with the occasion of the famous Silfit II, and I'm very glad that we have Italian colleagues here to help us with the national filling in on the Consorzio Italian management case. So this is the main idea behind my presentation, because the features of Silfit I, as they were clarified by the court in this Italian case, Consorzio Italian management, they are, on one hand, they are very much an object of critique on the part of the academia. On the other hand, here we are judges and prosecutors, we are very pragmatic. And my special and favorite way of approach something is just to see the full part of the glass, not the empty part. So my proposal for you is just to follow this new clarification, starting from the bold and very brave approach made by Advocate General Bobek. And maybe at the end, I'm going to propose you to take those parts which were not followed by the court in the final decision in Consorzio Italian Management, and to see how, as court coordinator, as judges, as prosecutor, we can learn in practice. So the structure of my presentation would be, I'm not going to allocate too much space for the legal context. Of course, the main problem in this Silfit II was this idea to refer or not to refer again to the court if we do not understand and when and why. And it was the good example of the Spanish colleagues with this repetitive approach and use or misuse of the preliminary ruling. And in the end, and this is the last part, actually an invitation for you to join in and to share your useful idea which are the lessons for the national judges from this particular case, so-called the clarification of the Silfit criteria and doctrine. Just an idea for this first paragraph of Article 267, because the Spanish colleague invited us to reflect a little bit on this idea of having first instance court submitting referrals, okay? As you all know, first instance court in each jurisdiction, they are under not the obligation, but the option. And while you were presenting the Spanish case, I've remembered particular something that really challenged me some years ago in Luxembourg seminar with President Lennartz, having this position. Actually, I prefer for the first instance court, so this one with the option to refer to ECJ. And we were a little bit puzzled. Oh, we are scrolling in our heads, the article, the conditions, the duty, and the option. I was very puzzled. And he developed a little bit the idea, and I invited you to think if he was right or not. This is the president of the court, of course he's right. But you know, national judges, they keep their critical mind, even if they're talking with the president of the Luxembourg court. And Mr. Lalas developed and said, let's imagine. So you have first instance court referring. We have the judgment of ECJ, what is going to do when solving the case, applying the ruling. The parties will appeal or appeal on points of law. What is going to happen in the final instance court? Definitely there, you, if it was a misunderstanding of our judgment, they will have the possibility to refer again. And we'll, in that, this format of two steps, first instance court, applying the ECJ, not being content, or the parties having different arguments, you go before the last instance court, which has the obligation, so paragraph number three, so we'll go again. Why? Because imagine in my system, I'm a court of appeal judge, and in many cases I deal in last instance case. Which is the control, which court will control my way of applying of ECJ judgment in a referral? None. So in this format proposed by Mr. Lennart, actually, if we reflect and think about again why he was so encouraging and advocating the idea of being under with the first instance court, that was quite an idea. And this is linked with my second part of the presentation with the preliminary ruling as a instrument for all of us, if we can refer or not. Secondly, of course, the same problem with the Spaniard colleague, but we can extend to Romania, Bulgaria, Hungary, and Poland nevertheless. Sometimes when we misuse this way of dialogue, this procedure, as you all know, the keystone of the entire system, sometimes we forget what is the scope of this mechanism of dialogue. You know, all of you, the objectives, but as we saw sometimes, either it is, and in particular I'm talking about Romania and maybe Bulgaria, it is used by the national judge when they feel a pressure from the judiciary body with the disciplinary weapon against a judge trying to and making use of this procedure. So this is a specific feature of certain countries. And in this context, even if maybe you can argue that this is not the scope of the preliminary ruling, actually allowing this mechanism, which is admissible in these cases, and we have plenty of new case law and developing jurisprudence on this idea of judiciary independence, in this connection with the national judge being under the threat of disciplinary proceedings based on the judiciary disciplinary body, whatever you have in your country, but the backup with the preliminary ruling and encouraging and having this in our hand, it's not necessarily on the strict scope of it, but it serves for the assuring the legal unity of the interpretation of EU law. Secondly, and I want to remind you of a great project made by EUI from Florence. It was an Actiones project some years ago, in which the academics plus the judges and prosecutor in a great project, they try to tackle beyond the reasons for which a national judge uses or abstained from using the preliminary ruling. So yes, indeed, it could be a situation, and it was one of the reasons, as mentioned by the Spanish colleagues, when you as a lower court, you feel that your Supreme Court or the Superior Court, not necessarily the Supreme Court, does not apply correctly, as in the Polish example you gave us, the EU law. So you have to do something and you use in order to somehow regulate, even if you are under the vertical disciplinary order from your Supreme Court, your Superior Court, which in many situations they are very conservative. This is a reality, so no reason to put it under the carpet, but it is a reality. So to conclude on this part with the introduction, we keep in mind that the preliminary ruling, as you know, under the option for the first instance court, under the duty for the instances of last resort, of course, can have multiple other explanation uses, scopes to attend. We do not have to forget that we are here, and I think our event is a true example of this dialogue in the judicial space, and this is a premise for the practical aspect. I'm going to take out and zoom out from the SILFID 2 because it's going to help us to find some solution. Of course, you know, the idea of having this shared responsibility between the court and the national court, and it is for us, in order to have this assistance and guidance from behalf of the Luxembourg court, to know how and when and correctly use the preliminary ruling. But it's, you know, everything from this part. As a teacher, I was very tempted to do something with the numbers because I was curious to see how is the status quo currently in for the participants. You have the numbers here, the total numbers for the last year. The preliminary ruling in interpretation, not in validity, is here. And the member states on top, as you can imagine, for years, we have our dear colleagues from Germany being the one on top with the questions. Secondly, it's Italian colleagues. Third is Bulgaria, we have the Spain, Poland, Romania, Netherlands, and Hungary. So these are the numbers for the last years. I don't know how the ranking is for this year, but apparently you as a court coordinators are doing great because the numbers, actually, if Carolina needed some good examples, I think she can inspire from the statistic. The causal link is a little bit problematic because we do not know, especially if the high number is the direct connection from the work of the court coordinator. But nevertheless, the high interest in using this instrument is shown by the number. Because I'm running out of time, and Carolina, she's the timekeeper, she promised, I'm going to delve in the second part, to refer or not to refer again. You know the condition from the 267, if you are a court of last resort, and you know the exception. It's classic textbook, nobody would ever present to an exam without knowing by heart the three exceptions from SILFID. What could be new in this area? Dear colleagues, a lot can be done with the exception from SILFID, as Advocate General Bobek did in his opinion, because he proposed a shift of the paradigm. Maybe just 1 minute to say, so if you are a court of law resort, you are you can let's set aside your duty to refer if the EU law is not relevant for solving the case. Act clear, you are reading the text and everything is clear for you, but we have the toolkit, how to check if it is clear for everybody, and act éclairé. So just briefly, 30 seconds, to know what was the current slate before SILFID 2. Advocate General Bobek, he proposed a very bold approach of these three exceptions from the classical SILFID. He proposed, and I agree on that, a switch from this subjective approach. It is what is act clair for me, I'm reading the text, the Romanian translation of the directive. Is it act clair for my dear Bulgarian colleague or not. So he wanted to, he proposed this switch from the subjective approach to more objective approach, taking in mind that object for the uniform interpretation of EU law. So, and I really love this idea that he proposed that this duty to refer, so last resort, should not be focused primarily on the correct answer. You would say, but he's not a judge, because judges, they want the correct answer in order to solve the case in a correct matter, but rather on identifying the right question. So that was his proposal, what happened in the case. We have Italian colleagues here with knowing and discussing the Consorzio Italian management, because it was a two-phase case. First of all, it was a tender procedure, so a public contract for cleaning services in your railway, yes? It was the first preliminary ruling submitted by your the Superior Consiglio de Stato, so the last resort. That was the question, it was answered, and the case came back for the Italian court. What happened after receiving the judgment from ECJ was that the parties asked the court, the Italian court, to refer again with different question. In this situation, so in the same proceedings, we have a first referral, we have the answer, we wanted to solve, but the parties, they wanted something new. And the Italian court imagined that, okay, we are under 267, we know the exception from Silfit, we have already the answer. Should we conceive this mechanism as implying some procedural bars for the parties to ask again and again and again something? In the same proceedings, and maybe that can be an abuse of this procedure. So we have here the first question submitted, because I underline it again, it is the last resort, the court of last resort in Italy, so it was under the duty second time. So the question is here, and I'm going to read it. In accordance with Article 267, is a national court, those decisions are not amenable to appeal, require, in principle, to make a reference for preliminary ruling on a question concerning the interpretation of EU law, and now is the plus, even where the question is submitted to by one of the parties to the proceedings after that party lodged its initial pleading, or even after the case has been set down for judgment for the first time, or indeed after a reference had already been made to the Court of Justice for a preliminary ruling. So this was the first question, offering for ECJ the possibility to clarify, to refine those classical three exceptions we know from Silfit 1. How ended? Actually, if you follow General Advocate General Bobek's opinion and his proposal and what in the end came out, I think it's a matter of debate for all of us, but I've proposed a positive approach, actually, to take the what were actually not the missed opportunities for the court to move on with the mechanism, but the added values from Silfit 2. What are the main two or three pluses of this very famous judgment, Consorzio Italian Management, so-called Silfit 2? So I'm going to underline the novelties and let aside the critiques of the academia and the journals and all the doctrine. I was very happy to have something new to put in, but as judges, you know, we prefer to be more pragmatic and step in the reality and just to keep in mind that we have a case to solve. So this idea of, again, is it possible to ask in the same procedure, the second referral, of course, the answer was, if you have as a court difficulties in understanding my judgment, Of course, you can refer secondly. And if you have, of course, new consideration to be clarified, to be submitted to ECJ. So what is in this toolkit of for national judges, when and how should I understand the exception from SILFID 1? What are the novelties in SILFID 2? First of all, at that point where we read the text, the regulation, and we'll say, ah, but this is clear. So act clear. No reasonable doubt on how to read it, understand it, and applying. Actually, in SILFID 2, the court added this doubt. Is it clear not only for you, the Spanish judge, Romanian judge, but if you are sitting in your desk and you put this simple question in mind, is it clear for my dear Bulgarian colleague? Would he interpret when reading the text in the same way? So we have a little bit to tackle this idea of existing divergent line of interpretation, first of all, among our national courts, and secondly, and I think this is real difficult and the bar is now very high based on SILFID 2, between the courts in other member states, so not only in my jurisdiction. And I've put the paragraph 49 here because I really loved the word. The court must be particularly vigilant that assessment or whether or not you have reasonable doubt as to the correct interpretation of EU law. You have to have regard to the objective pursued by the preliminary ruling, which is to secure uniform interpretation of EU law. That means across all the courts in EU law. The second big novelty of the SILFID 2 is expressing for the first time the fact that when you apply the exception, so you do not refer either because it's not relevant, it's act clair or act éclairé, you have to give reason. You are going to say, but this is nothing new. I have this obligation based on my national law. I remember something from Article 6 of the European Convention of Human Rights with reasoning why it is new. It is new because until this SILFID, we didn't have this in the EU law, this direct idea, very precise, that you, as a court of last resort, under the duty to refer, if you apply the SILFID exception and you do not refer, you have to give explicit reason, clear and detailed, on which of these three situations are you under. And if you are going to be curious to read the opinion of General Advocate Bobek, you're going to see that he used an extensive argumentation in his opinion on how to have this reasoning. The court put it in just one little phrase, but thanks God it was underlined that this obligation for the national court to give reason, it's a matter of 47 from the charter, so of course it is under the obligation. You are going to have the slides with the connection made from with the European Convention of Human Rights, which were the Strasbourg court was way ahead the Luxembourg court when stating that if you are a court of last resort and you refuse to refer and you do not give reason, that is going to be a violation of Article 6, okay? And we have the long cases, unfortunately. We start with the Italian cases, the big cases in 2014, where it was the Italian Court of Cassation not saying a word about this refusal. We move then to, and in that Dabi case, it was the first time when the Strasbourg court insisted that if you refuse to refer and you are a court of last resort, you have to apply the SILFID criteria, and from your reasoning, it has to be clear which was the exception based on you, which you refuse to submit. you'll have on the PowerPoint the other cases where the Strasbourg court during this time stated that either Lithuania, France, Romania, Slovenia, Greece, it is the last one from this March, we violated Article 6 of the European Convention, our duty to our requirement to give reason for the refusal based on a very strict approach on the Silfit criteria. So it was indeed the time to have the same obligation put in the EU law, in the Luxembourg court, and it was done in the Silfit case, Silfit 2. You'll have the other situation in which Strasbourg court, either it was Netherlands, Germany, Hungary, stated that it was not a violation of Article 6. I invite you to, if you are curious enough, to see why, where, or how, and how the Strasbourg court reached the conclusion that in these three examples I gave you, this last resort court, either it was the Supreme Court, Constitutional Court, Federal Court for Germany, they did not violate Article 6. It was always the specific circumstances of the case. They analyzed the procedure as a whole and took into consideration the specificity of the domestic procedure. So it's not the object of our meeting today, but in my opinion, it's very useful to go and see a little bit how was the standard on reasoning took into consideration by Strasbourg Court under Article 6 when understanding the new requirement from Silfit 2 in terms of you do not refer, but you have to give reason based on Article 47 of the EU Charter and in connection with Article 6 of the European Convention of Human Rights. So what was the conclusion of the court in Silfit 2? Apparently, if we read the operative part, you are not going to see much of an improvement, much of a clarification. At the first glance, you say, but it's the same as in Silfit 1. And now maybe you'll understand the frustration of the academia saying, but what is the plus? Where it is the novelty in this? But be patient, I'm going to underline the novelties. So it says that if you are a court of last resort, you must comply with the obligation, so the duty to refer, unless, and we start to find the exception. The question is irrelevant. It is the same with Silfit 1. It is relevant or irrelevant for solving the case. Logic, if no EU law in my case, why do I have to refer? Or that provision of EU law has already been interpreted by the court. Again, you are going to say, act éclairé, where is the novelty? Or that the correct interpretation of EU law is so obvious that as to leave no scope for any reasonable doubt. So far, we are on the same page saying that it's the same as Silfit 1, the exception, but now we have the improvements and the toolkit offered by this Silfit 2 in terms of what we have to do plus in addition now. The existence of such a possibility, okay, must be assessed in the light of the characteristic feature of EU law, the particular difficulties to which the interpretation of the latter gives rise, and the risk of divergency in judicial decision with the EU law. This is new, okay? And the last part, such a court or tribunal cannot be relieved of that obligation just because it has already made a reference to the court in the same national proceeding. So this is the situation, particularly in consortio management case, where it was the second time in the same proceeding. So you will have the obligation to ask again. However, it may refrain from referring the question on grounds of inadmissibility specific to the procedure. And we have, and Nicoletta approached a little bit in the morning, subject to compliance with the principle of equivalence and effectiveness. So this was the operative part. Now we are going to see what are the lessons for us from this new judgment. First of all, I really love the idea that having an act clear in front of you is like really as encountering a unicorn. It was the saying of Advocate General Wall. I know we have kids at home, and maybe you saw a unicorn under the bed, or it's a true possibility to have met a unicorn. But if you go and follow the toolkit one by one, so what does it mean to act clear? I'm reading the text. I'm reading the text only in Romanian. No, it was said in Silfit 1, and again in Silfit 2 clarified, you have to check at least several linguistic versions. So it's not as easy as we can imagine. We are reading only in Spanish. At least the court didn't give us a number. Read 2, 3. But we have a certain position, a sure position, that it's not enough to read just one official linguistic version of the EU law that you have to apply. And of course, we have limits in how many languages can we, from the legal part, understand and read. The court was generous with us, and it said it's not an obligation to examine each of the language version of that provision. It was generous, okay? But it must bear in mind what is very important, apart from this linguistic burden on the national judges, because you have to at least 2 or 3. You have to bear in mind, and it was said by our dear colleague here, that it's not only the language, it's the meaning behind the institution. Okay, so, and secondly, this idea that I have to be aware not only the divergent line of the interpretation of that EU law in my country, but I have to ask myself, if this question is going to arise before another European judge, would he think the same as myself? I think this is the most difficult part from the Silfit 2, to translate it from this idea in practice. How am I going to make this mental exercise? How my colleague from Bulgaria is going to understand the text in front of me? Okay. So, but what is clear, and on the last part, I've wanted to have some tools for here. It's just an invitation for all of us to put in practice these wonderful ideas and new obligation from Silfit 2. First, how can we check in at least 2 or 3 different versions? And I want to give you, to remind you of the possibility to go on Eurlex and just to use this very good tool of putting on the board the same text in 2 or 3 different. Unfortunately, it doesn't. How could I?
You have to leave the PowerPoint.
I will just put it here. Yeah, so this is what the colleagues they are saying.
Now please go down.
Okay.
Yes, and now go here.
Good. This is what I wanted you to give you as a shortcut. So you go on Eurlex and you have a multilingual display. And you have 3 columns, and you can have the same text in Romanian, Bulgarian, and English, or whatever combination you want to see. You see the columns here. And if you have a decent level of understanding two other different languages, you can't really make the this comparison, which is imposed. In order for you to decide it's an act clair, you have to check the linguistic part, the official languages, and this can be a very practical way of doing it. So you have the same text in three columns in three different languages. I'm going back to my PowerPoint, and it was the here.
Let's see. Yeah?
I said that we have the second novelty and burden on the shoulders of judges. I really loved another idea from the same general advocate saying it's very difficult to imagine that suddenly the national courts are going to transform themselves in a research comparative center. So to compare how this article it is interpreted and applied in Netherlands, let's compare how it is in Hungary, let's compare how it is in Spain. It is an impossible burden, okay? It is, at this point, it's very difficult in practical terms. I'm having the text of, because I'm going back to the example with habitual residence, I have Article 8 from the Brussels II regulation, and let's see how it is interpreted by colleagues in France, for example. So, solutions for this burden. First of all, and it is foreseen in the text of the SILFID II, it is more developed in by General Advocate Bobek, but what is for mandatory for us, of course, is the judgment. You ask for the parties. Imagine this scenario. You are in a court and you are asking for the parties. Are you aware of a possible divergent interpretation of this particular text in another country? Depends on the case. For example, I'm talking from my court where we have VTA taxes with a lot of big companies, a lot from Germany. And I can ask and maybe have or from France in energy fields or from Italy. So I can imagine that they have this possibility to check with the mother company in the country if it is a possible on the VAT directive. Second, make use of this Curia search form. Again, I'm going to open it and doing what Carolina taught me, because I'm learning each time with new seminar. No, apparently I was not. Let's close. I'm going to close because it's the final. Mm-hmm. Okay, and now I'm going to open the part from Curia. You all know it. I'm not telling something new, I just structured the information. Go with case pending. Go here, you put the text of the provision you want to see Brussels 2bis, and here, the source of the question for the preliminary ruling, okay? And you might want to say what is, on that particular regulation, the latest reference order made by the Spain colleagues, which is not the entire order, but is in the first phase. It is translated into English and French and put on the official gazette. So you can, if you find a preliminary ruling submitted by a colleague of yours from another country from that particular article, no matter what, it was not already decided by the court, you have a first red flag that might be a case of a divergent or a question, a possible approach, a different approach than yourself. So in my opinion, but I'm really eager to open the discussion with all of you to find out how we'll put in practice these two new obligation from SILFID II. How we are going to reason the refusal. Is it a European standard or we are going with our national standard. It is just one line. It is not the case to refer because SILFID exception full stop. But I've told you that in that situation you'll have a violation of Article 6 because you didn't give any specific detail on how and clear explanation why you are not referring. And unfortunately, this new standard introduced by SILFI 2, the obligation for you to give reason, because 47 of the charter and 267, unfortunately, it's not very detailed in the reasoning of the Luxembourg court. But keep in mind that now, in terms of how do we enforce this new obligation, we can have a situation of state liability because you didn't, and Kobler case and condition and everything, you didn't fully observe your obligation as a national judge now that is clearly stated in SILFI 2. So in my, as a conclusion, because you promised that you are going to keep the time, it is a long way from what it was proposed and foreseen by the Advocate General, who was very, really very bold, but maybe some of the good points underlined by in his proposal, he reshaped the three exceptions. So instead of stating that the EU law is not relevant for the case, as it was very conservative kept in the SILFI 2, Bobek proposed to have this new condition. Is the text raising a new, a general issue of interpretation of EU law? So a little bit different from relevant, it's a general issue of EU law. Second, this issue of interpretation can be subjected to more than one possibility of interpretation, that, and this is the mental exercise difficult for a national judge to imagine how this text can be interpreted in other way by other judges. Third, the way in which EU law at issue is to be interpreted cannot be inferred from the existing case law of Court of Judges, more or less similar with Acta Claré. And in this situation, if the Court of Last Resort decides not to submit, it is obliged to state adequate reason to explain which of the three conditions is not met and why. This was the proposal. I've read you the operative part, which from the court was quite the same, more or less. I will prefer to state as a personal approach that what the court did with SILFI 2 was just to keep the line of the continuity with the SILFI 1 for the sake of this continuity, and with these small steps introducing this new two obligation, duty to reason, and to check at least some version of other linguistic and the possibility of a divergent approach, not only in your national jurisdiction, but abroad also. Thank you very much for being so alert and keeping up the pace. I have to confess that it was running in the afternoon, but we have time for the discussion and for the workshop, and any questions or clarification are to be addressed now.